Hello and welcome to Roll for Topic, a roundtable discussion about topics related to running role-playing games. I'm Chris Salzman.
And I'm Andy Rao.
Andy, so I mentioned this to you before we jumped on, but I'm working on my co-working space right now.
Yeah.
And it's a lovely place. I'm in a like little phone booth where I'm recording this podcast. And of course, the conversation started up right outside the door, like basically as soon as we hit record. So I apologize if there's any kind of background noise. But yes, I think you referred to it as it sounded like kind of like a Parisian cafe.
We've now blown the chance to do that, but we could have pitched this as
honestly
phoning in from an exotic location.
Yes, honestly. I mean, it's kind of exotic, right? It's Ann Arbor, Michigan, downtown Ann Arbor, Michigan. It's my exotic location.
The bland white wall behind you does look pretty exotic.
So I wanted to, before we kind of dive into our topic that we're discussing, what we're going to talk about today. So I wanted to bring up, there's a book that I'm reading right now that I think you have read, I'm just enjoying it quite a bit. It's called This Is How You Lose the Time War.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lovely book.
It is a really, really good book. I don't know how much there is kind of gaming potential that comes out of it, although it does some really fun stuff, I think, just with the idea of time travel and stuff like that. But it's one of those books where you read it and you're like, this is doing something so fresh and unique and just wonderful. And it just tosses you into this whole world and doesn't really explain it to you. Right. It's in a way that I don't know, a good Gibson novel does too. I think where you're just I'm just kind of along for the ride on this. And it's expertly written. It's great. So I think I'm 60-70% of the way through it. Enjoying it thoroughly.
I love that book. It is a great read. It was a book you just will not always understand exactly what's going on, but that's okay.
It's great.
It's a great read.
Yeah, I think I didn't quite realize, and I don't think this is a spoiler necessarily because it comes up almost immediately. I didn't realize that it's a love story almost.
Yes.
At least in the beginning. So I don't know.
Totally is a love story. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I went into it thinking this is going to be a fun time travel book about, I don't know, a time war. Right? I was thinking more a time war, there's going to be guns and combat and stuff like that. Instead, it's this really deeply romantic.
You're the rare person for whom that revelation was a delight and not instantly return the book to the bookstore.
I was just remembering, is it old? There's another kind of time travel-y book about war. I cannot remember the name of it, but it does a lot of time jumps and stuff, right? So I was just sort of expecting that was going to be the concept of you have some sort of super soldier kind of going around in the time war. It was purely I picked it up because my wife was like, you should read this. This was really good. Right. And I was like, cool. So I put it on my list, my ebook, hold list from the library, and then it popped up.
That should have been a clue though. I don't think your wife, from what I know, is super into robot super soldiers traveling through time to prevent the apocalypse, but I could be wrong. So.
The other thing that I just started watching, The Chair Company. This is Tim Robinson's latest thing. I'm still trying to figure out how I feel about this show. It's quite good though.
That sounds like a reasonable reaction to his comedy.
I Think You Should Leave and all that sort of stuff. I mean, the gaming thing that I'm kind of pulling out from that is just the NPCs, the NPCs in that universe are just phenomenal, right? I think no one does better comedy kind of side characters than Tim Robinson and the people that he works with, where it's just you have these people with these throwaway comments and you're just there is a whole world there that they have a whole rich lived world that you just pick up from one or two sentences, right? And kind of their reaction to what's going on in there. And they might never appear ever again, but you still feel oh wow, each person is super unique here. So I mean, it's worth sort of thinking about from your RPGs, how do I infuse this person with sort of their own thoughts and drives and desires in a sentence or two. but I mean just giving them a little bit of a shtick, I think, is useful.
I'm waiting for that to kind of all the episodes to be done, then I can abuse a free trial weekend or something to watch it. It says and same with the new It miniseries,
yes.
Which, I mean, what it sounds like a disaster, but I guess people like it. So that means I have no choice but to watch it myself. So
yeah, one of my friends said he's enjoying it. I mean, he didn't say it's like, you know, great, you know, the best show ever, but like he is enjoying watching it. And I'm of the, I liked the recent movies quite a bit.
Me too.
Yeah. I thought they were pretty good. But I've never read the novel. I don't think I would make it through the novel to be quite honest, but
yeah. I mean, if you made it through those movies, you would, I get it. Yeah. So my reading has been a little different. So I've been a little busy lately just with real life stuff. So gaming has kind of been on the back burner, but, this week I got around to downloading, the second edition of the 13th Age RPG.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And I think I was just looking back at the last couple of years and, like, well, even just in the last 6 or 9 months, I feel like we are seeing the last that crop of like post OGL scandal D&D alikes that came out are now coming into the world, and you can buy them or pre-order them or get the PDFs. And I think this is it. So I was just taking a note of the ones that I either own or I have paid attention to. So we have Shadowdark, which was sort of Shadowdark, Daggerheart, Drawsteel, Tales of the Valiant, 13th Age, Second Edition. Those are like prominent ones. I know there are others as well.
And, yeah.
And if you look at those games and you put them next to D&D, you have a pretty fascinating range of how people answer the question of like, what should D&D look like?
Mm-hmm.
Right, you've got like Shadowdark is this really minimalist, like stripped down everything down to just one or two core mechanics. Drawsteel is this baroque, crunchy mechanics, heavy, all sorts of interlocking gears system. You have Daggerheart, which has all of these narrative meta tools plugged into it to create a more, you know, story-based narrative epic like thing. And it's just and then you have Tales of the Valiant, which is like pretty much just 5e, but with we sanded a few of the rough edges off of 5e. What an interesting array of games, and amazing that in this hobby right now, these are all like, you know, full color hardcover releases you can go pick up. Like, so I don't know, just feeling like we're in a golden age of like D&D likes. And I love seeing how different people, like when they sit down, they're like, I'm going to make my D&D. What is it? It just looks so different, like from group to group.
Yeah, it's great. And it's like, I mean, I think any of those are sort of designed to be sort of forever games, right? It's just like the game that you're always going to play with your group.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, maybe we could transition into kind of our topic, because I think I'm about to talk about Daggerheart in particular. So,
okay. Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So we were kind of talking about what we wanted to talk about. And so the thing I want to talk about is like, it's a very broad question, but it's how to be a good player. We're a GM focused podcast. These days I found myself, I'm now playing in two campaigns right now, which is amazing. It's like, kind of feel like my life is coming together a little bit get to do this. So I'm a player, right? And of course, like, I'm still sort of always thinking as like a GM brain GM, but like, as a, you know, like your considerations as a player, I think are different, right? Than a GM. So I've been starting to think about like, you know, like really think about like, how do I approach this in a way where I'm helpful at the table, or like, you know, really embodying this character, like kind of asking some of those questions. And this is mostly coming up with the new campaign that I just started playing. So Jess over with Splatbook started running a Daggerheart campaign. So we did our session zero, which was super fun, kind of building our characters. And then we had our first session a couple days ago as we're recording this, where we actually started playing the game, right? You know, so like, Jess is a phenomenal GM, right? Like, you know, she was also just coming back from like a vacation. So like, I mean, she was like, you know, running out like a little bit of sleep and stuff, but it was like, you could not tell. Like, it was like a really good session, super fun.
That's great. Stuff,
right? Yeah. So, but it's always that trepidation of that session, that first session where you're like, okay, so I have this character and I've got kind of all these ideas or, you know, all these stats and stuff I've written down, but now I'm going to actually have to, like, you know, play that character, right? And like, mm-hmm. that is different, right? It's a different switch from it going from like, here's this like kind of grab bag of mechanics and stuff to like, well, okay, now I'm being asked for like, narrate what you're doing in this space, right? Like, you know, how are you, mm-hmm. how are you interacting with each other? All those sorts of things, right? And like, it's invigorating, right? It's super fun as a player, like getting to do that too. Right. So the character that I'm playing in that campaign, I'll just give you kind of a quick overview, is like kind of this mushroom person, right? Like this mushroom person who kind of recently gained sentience, who's a cleric type class.
Yeah.
In that. And like the thing that I love about Daggerheart is that it gives you so many hooks into the narrative. Like, you know, like you get bonuses based on how you can draw from kind of your narrative side of your character sheet too. But then that translates into, you know, mechanical complexity as well. And it is also a really interesting system. Like, so getting to play it, like there's this like fear and hope mechanic going back and forth in there. So every time you roll and kind of you roll two die, you take the higher result is either going to be fear or hope, right? So you're kind of rolling with one of those. So if it's hope, you get kind of a bonus to your, you know, like on your character sheet. If it's fear, that goes to the GM, and then they can use that to make things harder, or, you know, to just to react in different ways. So what I'm finding with that system, at least as the player side, is like there feels like more of a conversation that's happening, even though you're rolling basically as the same amount of dice that you would in a D&D game. So even a failure feels like something is advancing in that, because you are either gaining a hope yourself, which you can then expend later on to you know, do some sort of action, or the GM is getting something based on that failure too. So it's a really interesting system. I think it's kind of solved a bit of the problem of D&D of like, oh, you just swing and you miss and then nothing happens. You move on to the next person. Is like, that's actually, there is some sort of like, some sort of benefit mm-hmm. there as well. So like, it's really cool from like the player side, I think, to see that kind of played out. But anyway, so I've gone kind of down a path here, but I want to kind of bring us back to the question at hand, which is like, okay, so like, you know, like as someone who typically is more of like a GM focused person, like how do I as a player step in and be a good player, like the sort of player that like people are happy to have at the table, or, you know, other players are excited have there. So I'll leave that open to you. I guess, do you have any kind of initial thoughts to that?
Yeah. Well, you know, when I think about that question, you know, I think like, so when I'm running a game, what do I either love when players do, or I wish they were doing when they weren't?
Mm-hmm.
And like, they relatively little of it like has to do with like the mechanics of the game. And I sometimes feel like the best players are the ones that are like helping me keep an eye out on how the mood of the table, and looking for ways to like spotlight somebody who has been getting talked over or sitting quietly for a really long time, or, you know, things that as GM I'm supposed to be doing. But when you have a lot of thoughts going through your GM head at the same time, sometimes, right, you aren't noticing that, like, oh, hey, Katie hasn't really had a chance to do anything in quite a while. And you know, it's stuff like that. And just like, you know, when I think like, what's the best kind of player, my answer is usually something like, you know, someone that's just like really enthusiastic and happy to be playing the game and not checking their phone or glancing at the clock, or, you know, or looking at their character sheet for the first time in 3 weeks since our last game, right? Because, you know, it's things like that. Like, I look for enthusiasm and like just a willingness to roll with what the GM throws out there instead of having the GM have to drag participation out of you. So, I realize that's all. It's all pretty simple stuff, you know, show up, be good to the rest of the people at the table, and, you know, and just participate cheerfully, I guess, you know, but those are the, and I'm not saying I, and, And I get that a lot from the people I play with do a good job of this. So I'm not, this is not my passive aggressive way of, calling out my players, but that's what I love as GM. And like, if that's happening at the table, it almost doesn't really matter if things really go according to my GMing plan or not, because it means people are having fun. So,
yeah. Yeah, it's, I mean, I should probably apologize to Jess more directly, because I don't know if she's going to listen to this, but like, I do feel like there's certain times, at least at this last session, where I was asking very like GM-y questions of other players. Like they, you know, someone would say, you know, say something, I'd be like, oh, like, what does that look like? That's
oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. But I was finding it like as a player, it's like, yeah, I think what I was trying to get at was what you were mentioning of like looking for those opportunities to kind of like, yeah, help along the story or like, you know, just add some nuance or just for me as a, like, as a player, like what are my other players? Like, what does it look like when you cast magic or, you know, like those sorts of things like are just kind of fun to riff off of.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't think that's a problem unless you're being weird about it, you know, or starting to overtake the game from the GM, you know, generally speaking, I would love to have players say stuff like that. Whoa, what does that look like? Or like, what does your sword actually look like? It sounds cool, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the other thing that I think about when I'm running a game is like, to me, a success in the game is often like, if it gets to the point where players are sort of talking in character to each other or asking like, yeah, kind of asking those questions of each other, because like, it means that there's an investment in the story beyond just sort of reacting to what's going on, right? It's like, that's something that I do try to like kind of do as a player. And again, I don't know if it's super annoying or not, but like, yeah, asking like, you know, in character, trying to ask questions of another character.
Yeah, for
right.
Sure.
Just to make sure that it doesn't feel like it's always just this one side of like GM asks a question, someone from the group responds, right? Like, you know, back and forth, like, yeah, kind of sharing that a little bit. Yeah. So, I mean, I also just think that's fun sort of as a player too, to like, yeah, get to the point where you're trying to understand your character enough to be like, well, like, how would they approach this? How would they interact with each other?
When, as a player, when you start to sense what the GM kind of wants you to do, or like what the direction of the adventure is that the GM planned, does that make you, when I'm in that experience, like I have a hard time switching off my GM brain. And like, one of the GM brain things that I'm always thinking is like, we got to keep this on track. Like, we can't just like waste time or fritter away. Or if the GM clearly doesn't want us to like go to Waterdeep, we should just scrap it and go to where the GM clearly wants us to go. And I don't like doing that because that makes me, that's me inviting a little bit of stress into like my experience of playing the game, because that's, but I'm just curious, what's your instinct? Are you a like noodle around and follow your heart? Are you a guys, the GM really wants us to say yes to this guy?
Yeah. I mean, I think we're you know, most GMs are sort of rule followers, followers in general. So I think like, we're all going to kind of be like, oh, well, of course. Yeah. I know. Right. Yeah, I think for me though, like when I want to, like as a player, if there's an opportunity to inject sort of like the character into that decision making, like that's what I'm usually trying to reach for, right? As a player, it's like, you know, it's not just like a, hey, everybody, like clearly he doesn't want us to go over there, right? Or she doesn't want us to wanted to go over there. It's just like, yeah, like how would my character react in this situation, right? And oftentimes, I mean, I have made, I'm sure, like, you know, like I've made in character decisions that are the wrong choice a lot, like, you know, partly because it's like, well, I mean, this is sort of true to the character too, but also I think as like a mechanism of like, not like fighting back against that, like, you know, like, oh, you really need to be staying on this path, but more of just like a, maybe there's a creative opportunity here for some sort of nuance to the story. Like, it's not like I'm like, oh, well, I'm going to go over to Waterdeep, even though we're all over here, right? And, you know, Neverwinter or whatever, like, you know, so like, figure that out, GM. It's more of like, you know, okay, like, so we're in Neverwinter. It's like, what's an interesting, you know, interesting decision that like this character would make that might kind of go against what is correct metagame wise.
Are you a rules person who like kind of steps up and you've read the combat system, so you're kind of helping the GM explain rules concepts to other players, stuff like that? Or no. Are you okay? Are you no. the person that the concepts have to be explained to?
Oh yeah, I'm like the worst player when it comes to having. Like, yeah, I think I mentioned this maybe in the last episode, but you know, this Daggerheart game is great. Right, there's a lot of like kind of friends of the podcast in it, and like we showed up, and I think like three of the people had like the full. The full book with the cards and everything, right? You know, and I was just like, I had brought like a notebook. I'm like, oh, dang it. Like, I'm getting outclassed here. Yeah. So I'm like borrowing cards from one of the players. I'm like,
The real question though is about how many hours a day do you spend practicing your mushroom person voice?
I'm still trying to find that mushroom person voice. And like, this is rare for me too. I'm actually considering like, should I get like a portrait like drawn of this, character, like to have at the table or, try to draw it myself or something. Cause it feels like that sort of game where art is important, right? Like art is phenomenal, like in everything that I've seen. Cause it's like, it's a fun character to play and I'm trying to be weirder than I might normally be with it, right? Like, so it's mushroom guy, right? So it's like, trying to really lean into that, like, what could that look like? I've already done a couple things that, like, at least one thing that like kind of grossed at the table, which I'm like, that's always a plus. within like the narrative and stuff. So it's it is fun being a player and like not having to concern yourself as much with sort of the state of the world, the GM considerations are very different from player consideration, right? Like your focus should be like, how do I make this character interesting and gel with the party and, that sort of stuff.
In between games, is this a sort of game where you and the other players are chatting and texting and what are we going to do next session? Or like, we got a big fight coming up. How are we going to handle this? That sort of stuff. Or is it more of a, like, see you in 2 weeks, which is the next time you will have mental capacity to even think about this?
Yeah. It's like, we're all adults. So it is definitely like a see you in a couple of weeks. Although, I mean, that might change, right? I mean, we do have like a Discord channel that we could talk about it. Right. So, I mean, we just did the first session and I was talking with, so John Corey is also playing again of Splatbook. And like, we were talking after, and like the session that we played, like there was like, it's essentially like the goblin ambush, right? That like, I think a lot of games will have, right? Like you're on a path, there's a cart overturned. What are you going to do? What are you going to do about it? Right. So of course, like we immediately like, get into trouble. So we're like, trying to figure out what's going on. Like I think in the back of our minds, we're all like, oh, of course this is an ambush, right? Like, but it's interesting to play that scenario, I think, in different systems. And I'm almost thinking that this might be like the way that I want to try out systems from here on out is like, how do you handle the, the goblin ambush?
Oh, I actually love that idea. Yeah.
Right. Cause it's just like, it really exposes a lot about the system. It's like, okay, like what sort of tools do you have available to you? So Daggerheart, you absolutely can do like, like talk things down if you want to. Like this was very clearly going to be a combat session, right? D&D is going to be the same way. You are like 99% of the time going to end up fighting the goblins. You're not going to be able to, Whereas I think like Daggerheart gives you a little bit more latitude there. Like other systems, like there would be no possibility of doing anything other than talking. Talking to the goblins. And then you get into the questions about like, well, then how quickly is combat resolved too, right? So it's like, like there's a way to run that in like Blades of the Dark where it's just like, one die roll and then it's over with. Or, or in D&D, it's like that's your whole session is a 3-hour combat session. Or, but it's...
Or in GURPS, you'd be like, for my turn, I'm going to move 2 feet closer to the and then I'm gonna crouch but not go prone and not kneel
you didn't say you were kneeling. But like, so Daggerheart has concepts of like melee range and I think like close and very close and like there's some of this like mechanic stuff that we're all sort of learning together about how do you roll, like what does that mean. So I think it's useful to have that encounter in any game because you're going to need to figure out lots of basics. And then, hopefully the intent is like, this is not the thing that's going to, TPK you, but it's a good way to start flexing.
I would really love it if every game every game rule book had a page that was like, here's how you do the goblin ambush in the system. And like,
yes.
And that is the way that, you know, how games always have a, you know, if games often have like a sample of play where there's like a, it's like a sample dialogue of a game.
Yeah.
What if that was always this exact same scenario? Yes. And it just, oh man, that sounds delightful.
Yeah.
Now I've got to stop myself from making up a project out of taking all the games off my shelf and writing a goblin ambush scenario for them.
Yeah, I mean, Andy, no, I want to do a Roll for Topic con game that is just like 10 minutes of the same goblin ambush in like a variety of like wacky systems.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like...
Yeah, you have a lineup of GMs. Everyone gets 5 minutes to run the goblin ambush as they in their favorite system, in their style.
Okay. I mean, there's an idea there, but anyway, okay. Well, we need to wrap up. This is a good conversation. Yes. I mean, I'm hoping this is sort of like, you know, like maybe this is sort of a startup conversation. If anyone is listening to this and you have further thoughts, you know, of course, please let us know. I mean, I think it is interesting to think about, because like, I don't know if it is something that is often asked of players, to say like, to think about like, how do you become sort of a good player, or like, you know, is that even a noble goal goal to have or anything like that. But yeah, it is something that I'm thinking about quite a bit, so I'm happy to get suggestions even from the people who the games that I'm playing. And you know, if you're listening to this, please tell me if I'm please tell me how I could do better. Leave a comment in the comment box.
I do think there are objective ways to be a good player, or to become, and there's like a objective definable skills you could get better at to be a better player at the table. But you're right. Everyone, including this podcast, you know, focuses on the GM as the one who has to get it right and learn the right skills and master the different social elements of a game and stuff like that. But, you know, obviously we all know players are participating, but we don't often ask those questions like, so what makes a good, how could I be a slightly better player at the next game than I was this game?
Yeah.
It's just interesting. Yeah. So why don't you keep us updated as that campaign plays out, and just let me know when you want to start doing these episodes with you in character as the mushroom person.
Oh, of course.
We'll make that switch.
Yes. Yeah. You'll be extremely frustrated by that. Okay. Be a lot of like, what is this microphone? Like, what are we doing?
Well, it would be easy for me because I'd break out my Russian Mario accent.
Yes.
Which works for any kind of weird NPC. So
yes, that's good.
All right. Good discussion, Chris. Thanks.
We have been at Roll for Topic. We're part of the Roll for It Media Podcasting Network. Our sister show, The Splat Book, with John, Jess, and Ben, is great. You can go find them at thesplatbook.com. You can also go listen to Andy and John at Zombie Strains, the podcast all about zombie movies. They are, you know, they're into the, is it the 40s now or the 50s?
We're into 1963
1963.
The most recent episode. Okay. Yes.
Yes.
And hitting a lot of Mexican cinema lately, so it's been fascinating. So
I'm super excited. There was one that you did recently that you said I need to go watch before I listen to that.
Yes,
that
Carnival of Souls, a masterpiece.
Yes, so. I need to go watch that. Which actually, this reminds me, I cannot believe we didn't talk about this at the start of this. I watched a very scary movie that maybe we can talk about next time. Talk to Me.
Oh,
This is the one about the hand.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you liked it?
Yes, with lots of caveats, but yeah, maybe let's talk about it next time. I think
sounds good.
Make for a lively discussion, but I'm usually good for one horror movie a year. That was the one we chose, and I maybe regret watching it late at night.
Yes. So,
yeah, cool. All right, well, that does it for us. I've been Chris Salzman.
I've been Andy Rao.
And remember, if your player's having fun, you're a great GM.